guitar people, welcome to Have Guitar Will Travel, presented by Vintage Guitar Magazine, with your host, me, James Patrick Regan, otherwise known as Jimmy from the Deadlies, and today I'm speaking with guitarist Galia Volt. In our conversation, Galia takes us through her upcoming tour dates, her solo dates opening for Devin Allman, and her band dates when she plays with a drummer and a P3 player, and she describes the differences between the two types of shows. Galia discusses how she developed the ability to accompany herself on both drums and guitar without any loopers, and she describes busking in Europe and in the US when she started on guitar. Galia takes us through her R&B band in Brussels, Belgium when she was just 18, and she discusses how she arrived at 40s and 50s music through punk and rockabilly. Galia takes us through how she started playing guitar, and she takes us through her guitars and amps, a Gibson Les Paul and a lot of early Tiescos, Harmonies, and early Japanese and European budget guitars, and cigar box guitars. And she talks about her 3-amp live rig. Galia discusses working with J.D. Simo, who produced her new album, Burn the House Down, which will be released on May 15th, and she talks about living and playing in New Orleans and her love of Brussels, Belgium, her hometown. To find out more about Galia, you can go to her website, galiavolt.com. That's GHALIAVOLT.com. Please subscribe, like, comment, share, and most of all, review this podcast. I'd really appreciate it. And please support Vintage Guitar Magazine and all the wonderful things they do for us guitar players, because they do so many wonderful things for us guitar players. Oh, and hey, if you want to support the show, you can go to patreon.com/HaveGuitarWillTravelPodcast. Here's my good friend Galia.
We're trying the technology.
You're doing a good job because you're here.
Right on.
How do you pronounce your name, Galia?
Yeah, that's good enough.
I want to know what is correct.
That, you know, there's no correct way. So Galia is totally, you know, in French, they say Galia. It's just flat. So, you know, in Italian, they say Galia.
Well, it's nice to meet you. First off, I should say that. You are from Brussels, Belgium, originally?
That's right.
Yeah. Right. Yeah. When you tour right now, are you touring with a drummer and person on B3?
Yeah. So as a band, like I'm about to do like a dozen of one woman band shows here opening for Devin Allman. And then after that, I'll be on the road with the band for the rest of the summer.
Oh, wow. Okay. And how often do you do the one woman shows?
I've been doing both. I enjoy it. It's a very different show.
Are you sure?
People, I have some people that say, oh, it's so much better when you're by yourself. Oh, and then some other, they see me one woman band and they see like, oh, with you and the band, it's a whole different thing. Like, yeah. So people like both. I think they're very different, different energy, different songs, different guitars. It's just two different shows. And I really enjoy both of them.
Right on. And as far as the, you know, playing drums while you're playing guitar, when did you, I understand you busked up for quite a while, but when did you develop that, you know?
That was a pandemic thing.
Oh, was it? Okay.
Yeah. Before pandemic, I used to play in this club, local club here in New Orleans, quite often. And, you know, I would do with the band and then I would do two shows by myself. And I started bringing like a stump box and a little tambourine, you know, each foot. And then during the pandemic, I finally like just started like messing with real drums, because it was the same thing.
Yeah.
But with a much better sound.
Sure. Absolutely.
And that's how it all started. And then I practiced it for a few months at home during the pandemic. Uh-huh. And then I went on tour when everybody was just seated and bored at home. I started booking some shows like that as one woman band and recorded a whole album and kept going.
Yeah. Was there, during the pandemic in New Orleans, was it pretty shut down, or were there still places you could play?
No, it was pretty shut down. Yeah.
Okay.
You know, they were doing some outside stuff. I don't know. For me, like during the pandemic, it was really like I just kept moving. When it was bad in the South, I would go to the North.
Yeah.
You know, like, I mean, like a place like Idaho never shut down, you know?
Yeah.
Did not give a fuck. and then when it was bad in the North, I would just play in the South. And then when it was bad in the United States, I would just go play in Europe. So luckily, it was just by waves. Like, everything was getting bad at different time.
Yeah.
So I lucked out. Yeah. I mean, it's not luck. It was just...
Well, it was work.
A lot of travel and... Yeah. A lot of traveling, a lot of work, yeah.
Yeah. And... busking in general, when did you started busking?
I started busking like, when did I start busking? Good question. Maybe when I was like 19.
Okay.
Yeah. 19 years old. And then I did that for just, to be honest, just a few years. I mean, people just build that whole story. Like, you know, what I started doing was like, I started playing in the clubs in Brussels with my R&B band, seven-piece band. I had like, you know, saxophone, trumpet, piano, like upright bass.
Oh, wow.
It was a whole orchestra. I was 18 years old.
Wow.
And everybody else was like 50 or 60 years old in the band. You know, in Brussels, nobody of my age grew up listening to what I was listening. So that was the only band I found, and it was a lot of fun. And then I started working in a music store. I was 18. And if I remember well, by 19, I was like, I stopped the music store because I could make so much more money busking in the street.
Sure.
So I'd say I bust from like my 19 to my maybe 23, 24 years old, you know?
Yeah.
But I was playing clubs at the same time. So it's just, you know, like clubs in Belgium, you know, there's so much you can do. Now, busking, you create your own job daily on your own schedule.
Were you busking just in Brussels or was it everywhere? Like, was it throughout Europe?
No. I just bussed in Europe. I mean, you know, I might have traveled once or twice, like hitchhiking to Barcelona and just, you know, play like we call it a bus, you know, what's a terrace? Like in Europe, we have a lot of outdoor sitting.
Sure.
So, you know, you just like the mariachi, you know, you just go ahead with your guitar. But really, like, that was even before I started actually busking in Brussels. Like, that was before that. We just do that, just like a few songs and just buy booze and, you know, and travel and bus tickets with the money we'd make like that. Yeah, so, no, really, I just bussed, intensively in Brussels and then here in New Orleans and Memphis and Nashville.
Yep. Did you ever have a problem with the gypsies?
It's funny you say that. I for two reasons. Number one, yes, I have. we were fighting over the spots, the good spots in Europe, never here in the United States. So sometimes, yes, we would fight over spots, you know, and then some other time busking is all, you know, you can get like some kind of fucking drug head just coming and trying to steal the tip jar. You know, sometimes you have to wait in line to get the spot that you wanted. There's a bunch of, the city in Brussels had a bunch of schedules. You could play the even hours, but not the, was the opposite, the odd hours.
Odd hours.
And then, but what's funny is like that, because you mentioned gypsy, like there's like, people write all kind of crazy stuff, but there's like a bunch of people that think I am from Romania. because I'm half Spanish and my Spanish side is from, you know, it's got some influences of like the Spanish gypsy, we call it gitano, but that's got nothing to do with Romania. I mean, oh, we talk about like 400, 500 years. So, you know, I think it's funny, like Galia, she's from the Rome community. I'm like, what are people saying?
You ran your own band, your own R&B band when you were 18?
Yeah.
Have you always been very assertive? I mean, that running a band, is, especially with that many musicians, is pretty tough.
Yeah, it was. Yeah, I don't know. I never thought of it. I just, that's a quality. I just do things.
Yeah, right on.
so, yeah, it was weird for sure. I was booking the gigs and leading the band. Everybody was nice, though, like, because for them, it was just like, they enjoy that music so much. It was just happy to play it.
Yeah.
You know, everybody had like a job. It wasn't like they were running after gigs. And at the time, you know, I smoked a lot of weed and you just get to get and drink a lot of, we don't say that.
I'm only kidding. What kind of music were you listening to? I mean, at 18, what was your inspiration for having an R&B band? Who were you listening to?
Ruth Brown, Laverne Baker, Louis Jordan, Chuck Berry, you know, Fats Domino. Little Richard is my idol. Like, I love him. You know, like Sister Rosa Tharpe. There's just a lot of R&B. When I say R&B, you know what I'm saying, like the
40s. Yeah, I know what you're saying. Yeah, of course.
Little Willie John and just all the piano guys, also like, you know, and then Jack Hammer, Otis Blackwell.
Yeah.
You know, Wynonna Harris.
But how did you get exposed to those people? Like most of the kids your age weren't listening. They were listening to something else, like Sabrina Carpenter or something like that.
Techno. Rhythm and blues. So when I was a kid, so I was into punk music a lot, and then I discovered that thing called the psychobilly.
Yep.
And so I would go in a lot of psychobilly. It's pretty big in Europe, psychobilly.
Okay.
And rockabilly. So I would go to those shows, and then one time, you know, it was just like, must have been like, I don't know, 16, 17 years old. It's just like, I think it's kind of like, you know, you see like Johnny Burnett.
Yep.
And then, you know, you discover Tiny Bradshaw, or however you say it. And I'm like, whoa, this is so much better. And then that's how, you know, you just learn that all those rockabilly tunes is just like a tight version of like, the very soulful rhythm and blues songs.
Yeah.
And I still like, you know, I like both. It's very different, but that's how I got introduced to R&B, was with the rockabilly culture.
Yeah. And how about guitar? How did you start learning guitar? Did you have a teacher or how did that happen?
Well, I'm very stubborn. My best friend, we were like, it's just 11 years old. Like she received a guitar and I grabbed it. I would go to hers all the time and I was playing with my thumb. I didn't even know how it works. And I started writing songs on it, although I didn't even know what was up on that neck.
Uh-huh.
That's my first introduction to guitars. And then I started taking lessons when I was like maybe like 13, you know, and I had like my first electric guitars at 12. But again, I was a very slow learner. Just that smoked too much, you know. Like I was a bad kid. We're going out to punk shows and smoking a lot of weed. I probably totally annoyed my teacher at the time. So to tell you that I learned with a teacher back then is a lie, because really it was just like, hey, show me this Sid Vicious song, like, you know, this a Sex Pistols song.
And, sure.
And then he was like, whatever. He probably showed me everything, the same thing over and over because I was forgetting. Then I went to a jazz school after high school for a year. And then I dropped out of there because I was just enjoying the music on the side my own way. And then I started traveling anyway. I guess the way I learned how to play guitar is really just by traveling around the United States and a lot in Mississippi, because that's, you know, like it feels like, you know, it's a congregation of people that wanted to play, that wanted to learn that style, that, you know, and happy to share too.
Sure.
You know, I feel like, you know, I like sometimes to tell that story that, you know, like, I mean, I learned a lot from two guys like Sean Apple, Lightning Malcolm, about the setup. The one woman band set up, because like those guys learned from Jack Owens and, you know, and other guys that were playing down in Bentonia. You know, I don't know. I would just watch people play. And I still don't know what I'm doing, but it's all in my head. I've watched so many hours. So I really play by feel. I'm not like on YouTube learning, you know, videos, like I can't stand that, or like I'm not reading charts in a book, like you know, I play with the records, I play with the CDs, I watch people performing, and I'm like, oh, that's cool, and then I try it at home and then it sounds like something else. And then instead of focusing, because I don't have that capacity, instead of focusing on the original riff that I'm trying to learn, I'm making my own. And so people call me like, sometimes, oh, Gallia's picking guitar playing is great. I'm like, I don't pick the guitar. Like, I pinch the guitar. I pinch it. But I don't pick it, like.
Are those your CDs that just showed up?
Yeah.
Right on.
I'm about to see them for the very first time.
Right. And when is the record gets released today? Is that right?
May 15th.
Oh, May 15th. A month from today.
That's right. We had like 2 singles out already.
Yep.
Another one coming up at the end of the month. And then, yeah, the release.
Yep. What were you playing when you were, had the R&B band, what were you playing as far as gear?
I wasn't playing.
Oh.
I was singing.
Okay.
I was singing and jumping all around the stage and going in the crowd.
Uh-huh.
I'm actually an even better entertainer when I don't have a guitar in my hands. I'm always looking into doing something,
uh-huh.
You know, jumping, climbing on the side of the stage or like on speakers.
Yeah. Have you ever seen Michael Monroe?
Mm-mm.
No. Okay.
No.
Never mind. How about James Hunter? Do you know who James Hunter is? The James Hunter 6?
Just the name.
Yeah. Fair enough. So when did you start performing with a guitar?
Well,
when you came here?
So I had my first New Orleans band was a band called the Mama's Boys with Johnny Mastro and the Mama's Boys. And I would just pick up the guitar to play like just a little set, like an open D set.
Uh-huh.
So that was like kind of, so my first guitar performances was through that little set into that show. Was like playing like some Elmer James style shuffles and some original songs.
Yeah.
Like Meet You Down the Road and this, you know, kind of laid back hill country blues style.
So when you started playing, what were you playing then as far as guitars?
What do you mean?
When you were doing the open D stuff.
Right.
Yeah, what were you playing?
What was I playing?
Yeah, what kind of guitar?
Oh, okay, I see. I don't know. You see there's a whole collection over there. And that's pretty much it. If you look over there.
What about the white Les Paul?
Yeah, that's my main axis on the other side. It was plugged in 2 seconds ago.
What about the ES-335?
He is 335. Mm-mm.
No.
That's probably me boring it. So I like those K. I can show you actually. This is my first like opening guitar, open tuning guitar. It's an old Craftsman.
Uh-huh. Wow.
So that was pretty much what I was playing when I was playing open D.
Yeah.
And then this baby here, you know it.
Yep. Exactly, your white Les Paul.
So that's where like, that's what I was playing like in standard. So the old Craftsman. Oh, I love that babe. It's from the 60s. It's got a Kleenex. They call it the Kleenex pickup in it.
Yeah. Yep.
You know, I love the lipstick and the gold foil.
Yeah. What brands are those? Those behind you?
Let's look at them. So that's a Feather. It's part of Tiesco.
Yep, of course.
Oh, it's got the gold foil on it.
Yep.
And then this is just like an old Tiesco. I bought it for $40 because I wanted the pickup.
Right on.
But turns out that I love the guitar, so I'm not gonna sell it. I'm gonna keep it the way it is.
Yeah.
And I got this. I forgot what number that is, but like that's the Elmo James guitar.
Yep.
You know, it's like the first K electric K guitar they made. I forgot the K, was it K90 or something? Like,
we're gonna say yes.
It's got the thingy here is just the quarter. The cable is like coming straight out of
right out of the guitar.
I love that silver tone with the lipstick pickup.
Of course.
And then that became my main open D guitar.
Okay.
It's like that old Harmony Stratotone.
Yep. Also with the gold foil.
Gold foil. That's definitely my way. Yeah. That became my favorite tone. And then, the thing goes on and on. I got the Vox, the Bulldog Vox here.
Wow. Right on.
Totally original. Came in the case, given to me by an old man who wanted me to play the guitar. He didn't want to have the guitar just sitting.
Yeah. Did you pick up most of those here in the United States?
Oh, yeah, absolutely.
Yeah.
Then, you know, I have the built-in case.
Oh, wow.
I have, this is the, they call it the pan fry.
Uh-huh.
It's the steel guitar, lap steel.
Yeah.
it came in that beautiful snake
snake cover
case, and you know, it's heavy.
Very heavy.
And then, I mean, you name it, I have all the little silver tone you can imagine.
Is that Gibson?
Those are silver tones, and this is the Valco.
Valco, okay.
It's a copy of the Gibson.
Yeah.
And then cigar box guitars, they're there.
Yeah.
They're there.
Does everybody want you to play the cigar box guitars?
Yeah, all the time. I play them with the one woman band show, essentially.
And when you go out on, like, so you're going to go out on tour doing the one woman show, what are you going to use for an amp?
So for amp, I split my guitar signal in three.
Wow.
I play one of the, so it's, they always simultaneously played. I use one of the little silver tone that I showed you. I use a bass cap, like a big, you know, bass amp, whatever there is.
Yep.
Right now, I just have the little rumble Fender. And then I use a deluxe for the clean tone.
Yeah. What are you using to split the signal?
ABC pedal.
Like who's, do you know whose pedal it is?
Morley?
Is it not Morley?
Oh, yeah, Morley.
Okay.
I'm not really a pedal girl, and that's the beauty of one woman band.
Yeah.
There's no effect. The tone is massive, and it comes from the 3 amps.
Yeah. No reverb.
Yeah, I like the little reverb on the twin or the deluxe.
Yeah.
And then the silver tone is just like an 8-watt. I crank the shit out of it, and it sounds dirty. and that's the thing that, you know, it covers all the spectrum. You got like the dirty kind of edgy sound from the little silver tone, 8 watts. Then you got like the warm tone, very clear sounding with a little reverb with the Fender Deluxe or Twin or reverb.
Yep.
Whatever there is fine with me. And then I have the bass cap. So I really cover all the spectrum, like the frequencies. I mean, the bass amp just adds so much bottom and roundness to my sound. I mean, I got that tone down to science, you know? Yeah. And then I like the sound of, like, real drums, you know? I don't like half, you know, people come up with, like, some, like, the farmer's drums or, like, the very thin kick drum that is just like this.
Yeah.
I carry everything, man. Like, carry everything. 3 amps, the drum set, all the guitars, like 5 guitars. And
wow.
But I know my tone. Like, I want to have the same tone every night.
Yeah. Do you have to fly to some dates, though?
I do. That's harder. I have figured a way to handle that. You know, like with the drums, you know, I need sandbags for sure.
Yeah.
And for the guitar amps, what's usually missing is the little silver tone, right? Yeah. Yeah. So I find that the little tweed Fender,
mm-hmm.
like the baby one, like really, I think it's just 10 watts.
The Champ?
But the Champ is even better.
Yeah.
But I'm talking about, what it's called, like the tweed.
Something. I think. Yeah. Okay.
The Twin, yeah, it's a little, it's like the Blues Junior.
Sure.
But a smaller version of it.
Gotcha.
10 watts version of the Blues Junior. So if I crank that, then I can get that you know, that Elmore James, Hound Dog Taylor sound that I'm looking. That's really what I'm looking for. Like, he's just, you know, almost like blowing the speaker.
Yeah.
Of one of those tube amps, and then top it with the bass sound and the clean sound.
Sure. Who works on your guitars and your amps? Are they there in New Orleans?
Yeah, I got Paul Webbs. He's our favorite guy around town. And then I have a buddy of mine, John Krupa. He just moved to Nashville, to Austin. But he also works on them. And then I don't fuck them up too bad. So
good for
usually
you.
They don't need that much. I'm not that kind of person that changed strings at every show. You know, like, eventually I'm like, okay, those strings are really dead. Like, I gotta do something about it. And then, you know, I'm the kind of person who forgets how to change strings every time.
Sure. Yep. How'd you get hooked up with J.D. Simo?
So the first time I met J.D. Simo was at the WC Handy Festival in Henderson, Kentucky.
Okay.
That's how we met. I've had heard him before that. So that's how I met him. And then during the album Revival Tour, we met again. And, you know, I think he was a guest for like, I was doing the whole tour, but he was a guest for, I think, like 10 dates or like whatever. Uh-huh. So we got to really just hang out. And him and Luther were very, I love the guys, you know, they're
sure.
very,
yeah.
they're like big brothers, you know? And then, he always said, like, I want to record you. He's always told me that.
Uh-huh.
Me and my manager at the time last summer were talking about what was the options for this new record, and I was thrilled to work with JD.
Right on. Yeah, good. It sounds mm-hmm. great. The album sounds fantastic.
Thank you.
Yeah.
Thank you. Yeah, I love the guy. I love the guy. He's a genius, man.
Yeah, and he's a great guitar player, too.
Yeah, he's a genius. Like it's like what he's playing is just so good that I think most people can't even understand. It's so good.
Yeah. And what brought you to New Orleans? I mean, besides the music, obviously, but like, do you have like a regular gig there in New Orleans?
I don't play the clubs anymore. I've paid my dues. I used to play like 6 or 7 times a week.
Uh-huh.
I play all the clubs. I play Bourbon Street. I play Frenchman.
Uh-huh.
And I never went back to the clubs after pandemic. After pandemic, it's just been tours.
Uh-huh.
You know, I'll play local theaters or clubs and every now and then, you know, during events or like Tipitinas and that kind of stuff.
Sure.
But what brought me to New Orleans, I mean, it really is just music.
Yeah.
You know, the thing is that when I first got here, I thought it was just going to be a stop, like a step in my travel.
Yeah.
Which it was. But then everywhere else I would go, like nothing could top it. Like nothing even compared to New Orleans.
Sure.
And then I met that band I was telling you about, the Mama's Boys. And we just, you know, we just recorded that demo in 2016. So when I went back to Belgium and I told my label about the demo, it's like, why don't you just go back there and record the whole album?
Yeah.
And that's how it happened. So I came back. I'm like, I mean, sure. I never thought of moving to the United States. It just happens.
Yeah.
Right. I'm not big on commitment of decisions, you know. I don't think about things. I just do them. So like when he said that, I'm like, well, sure, I'll go there. And so I start spending more time here than in Belgium. And eventually I just realized that actually I was here.
Yeah.
Eventually, I shipped all my, you know, stuff here.
Yeah. Do you ever run into Tuba Skinny playing in the streets?
Yeah. I don't hang out in a quarter so much anymore, mm-hmm. to be honest. So, but, you know, I see them at the local clubs, like DJs or Vaughn's or, mm-hmm. you know, sure, in the street. Usually when you have guests, you go to the French Quarter.
Yeah.
I don't do them. You know, being on the road a lot and seeing so many people.
Yeah.
When I get home, I just like my own space, play my record.
Yeah.
You know, go to local joints more than the crazy quarter.
Yeah. Do you ever run into Johnny Moeller from the Thunderbirds?
Sort of thing. Matter of fact, it's funny, like, Johnny and I often meet at the airport. He's going somewhere, I'm going, he's coming back, I'm leaving.
Yeah.
It must have happened like 3 times, you know, in a row. We were like just, and then we do the whole line together going through customs. I love the guy. He's amazing.
Yeah. And so what do you do outside of music? What do you do for fun?
I like to cook. I like to shoot pool.
Right on.
I like to listen records.
Yeah.
Hunt for records.
Mm-hmm.
Hunt for thrift, you know, like clothes.
Sure.
And then work out, you know, just do some
Normal stuff.
You know, take care of the mind and body.
Yeah, yeah.
We talk about vintage guitars. There's a lot of options here.
Yes, there is, for sure.
You know, it's just that, you know, I love them so much, you know, and the cheapest, the best, you know. Sure. I'm not into like those 10K guitars like this over there. That I bought that little Tiesco for $40.
Wow.
When out there in the bayou and find this old man, it's, you know, he's like, well, I have this. And then he showed me the Elmore James guitar. Yeah. And I was like, oh my God. But, you know, like, it's all about finding the right deal.
Uh-huh.
But if the you know, the ones I bought in a store, a legit store, most of the time it's been in Gravity Strings in St. Louis.
Okay.
That's kind of been like my little, you know, like, sure. When I tour to St. Louis, that's first thing I do is I go to, where are you located?
I'm north of San Francisco.
Okay. All the way. The other way.
But there's, if you ever, I mean, I'm sure you've been to San Francisco before, but in San Francisco, there's a store called Real Guitars.
Okay.
R-E-A-L. And those are, they have a lot of, I mean, they have a lot of everything, but they have a lot of really cool cheap guitars as well.
Oh, that's nice. But do they still sell it for cheap?
Yeah. Those guys will deal.
Okay.
Yeah.
It's like that a lot of time, like, you know, like, you know, those guitars, they are the cheap guitar, right? But yes, they sell for a lot of money.
Yes, they do. Well, I think everything is slowly, you know, turning the corner and not quite so expensive.
It's not?
I think that things are, the values are stabilizing or maybe going down a little bit.
Really?
Yeah.
My
own personal opinion. Sorry.
Yeah, I don't know because, you know, usually I just find a little niche. But that's cool. Like, I have a friend. So one of the friends that builds my cigar box guitars, uh-huh. His name is Paul Merom. He's a great guy. And, you know, he builds all kind of crazy guitars. But I know he goes and somewhere close to L.A. Mm-hmm. or Hollywood.
Yeah.
Because he always finds this amazing old craftsman and, like, all, like, you know, like,
sure.
Trees and then he modifies them and creates some crazy guitars,
uh-huh.
with like matchbox frets and like it's some amazing work. And then the license plates guitar that I play that he makes them.
Does everybody go crazy when you pull out the license plate guitar?
Oh yeah, they do. They love it.
Yeah,
they love it.
Yeah,
that's what I want to do now. I want to put one of those gold foil pickup.
Mm-hmm.
And into that license plate.
Sure.
And see how that sounds. Because I've never seen or heard a gold foil pickup into one of these.
Yeah.
It might be good, it might be crazy, I don't know.
Who's the guy that makes those?
His name is, his artist name is Paul Merrow.
Okay.
And Ken Falstaff, I think is his name. He's located in Hollywood, L.A. Well, he lives in Akron, but goes to LA every day.
Okay.
And then there's another guy that built my main axe as far as cigar box guitar in Alabama.
Uh-huh.
And that's like, and that cigar box guitar is not the cutest as the license plate, but this one sounds so powerful.
Yeah.
Great guitar.
Do you have a problem with those feeding back, the cigar box guitars? Do they feed back a lot?
No. I don't have feedback problem. The license plate guitar have less bottom.
Okay.
And that's sadly, like, you know, it's part of my tone, so that frustrates me a little bit. But the other one I was telling you about 2 seconds ago,
uh-huh.
it's got a like a really nice sound. So.
Very cool.
Nope.
And do you run into a lot of other women blues players while you're traveling and playing some of the festivals?
I don't know, women, men. I try not to.
Yeah.
Women and men.
Yeah.
You know, like, oh my God, I was just playing the Egyptian festival in Clarksdale, and that woman, she dates a musician, right? And she's sitting there and just like, oh, you know, Galia, congrats on the music, blah blah blah. And I'm like, okay, cool, thank you. He's like, yeah, it's really, congrats for everything you're doing. It's like, not bad for a woman. I'm like, dude, you are a woman. What are you talking
exactly.
about? What would you do that? What would you be that person that, we already have to fight that in you, you gonna say that yourself? Like, this is weird. I don't know. I think the being a woman in the business, the only problem with that is just making it appear like that, you know, like,
sure.
You know, it just should be, there should not be the chick and blues festival.
Yeah.
It's still like the bulls and blues festival. No.
As far as, are you booking your own shows?
I was until this year. So. Okay.
And now you're with an agency?
Yeah, the same agent as Tabanois and Devin wow. Allman.
Yeah, right so on.
That's been really good. And, you know, I'm very on top of shit. I'm not just sitting around. And,
oh, no.
If I get an email, I answer to that email, you know. And a lot of time.
I would never accuse you of that. You seem very on top of things.
yeah. But, you know, it's missing. Sometimes people, they just get jealous of all the dates and all the good things that happen. And I'm... You know, and then they compare the playing. I'm like, you can't be the best musician in the world, sadly, if you don't have that business.
Absolutely.
Thing. It's just, sadly, you know, you either you're really lucky or, you know, that's it. You're just going to keep your talent for yourself because, you know, getting around is a constant job. And to be honest, like being on stage is my favorite part.
Oh, sure.
Of the job.
Yeah.
But what it takes to be there
is a lot of hard work.
Yeah, the hours behind the computers is, I hate it.
It's stupid. Yep, I agree. I agree 100%. And then look at you right now behind a computer.
Yes. Not too bad, though. That's not too bad.
Does your agent book shows in Europe, too, or do you have to handle that?
No, I have I booked my own shows in Europe. I'm also collaborating with different agents over there.
Yeah.
Like in Spain or Scandinavia or France.
Yeah.
Those are all different booking agents.
Yeah. Do you give them like a set of dates and then they fill
them? Yeah, usually like a period of time.
Yeah. Okay. That's cool. And how often do you get to go back home to Brussels?
Not enough.
Yeah.
I was waiting for my green card this year, so I couldn't go back for a year, but I have my green card.
Okay.
Which is finally, you know, it took me all those years to make this work. So that's very cool. But so I go to Brussels, you know, before and after a tour, pretty much. But okay. It's only like a few days.
Yeah.
You know, 3 days in and out. Because by the time the tour is over, I want to be home because I haven't been home in like a whole month, or 6 weeks.
Yeah.
So, yeah.
Who watches your place there when you're in Europe?
Here?
Yeah.
I mean, that's a tricky question. I'm not going to answer because...
Okay, that was a test, and you just passed, so you're good.
There you go. Were you expecting you?
No, not me.
You need a place to crash in New Orleans?
That would be great, but no, I'm good. I'm stuck here in Napa, California, so no.
Oh, you're in Napa, huh?
Yeah.
That's nice.
It's, you know why you don't go down to Bourbon Street?
Oh, okay.
Because
you
of
feel
all the
like
cars.
That?
Yes. Yeah.
Oh, you don't like that part, huh?
No. Who would like that? Nobody likes that. It's okay to play.
Yeah, I hear you. I love that wine, though, but...
Yeah.
I mean, I did the visit myself a few years after, like, I played Blues at Palooza, and then I went on a birthday little trip in Northern California.
Yep. Well...
I hear you. I was shocked that the wine is not cheap over there, though.
No, it's expensive. I was going to use a bad word, but it's very expensive.
What's the bad word?
Fucking. It's fucking expensive.
Oh yeah, it's very expensive. I'm surprised. You know, like I worked in a champagne store years back, and you know, when you go to Champagne, you're going to have cheaper champagne. Like the champagne is cheap. If you go anywhere in France or Spain, like in the area, you'll have cheap wine.
Yep.
So I was surprised that the only places that doesn't have cheap wine at production in the production areas, California.
Yeah, it's stupid.
You need to know, but like you probably know some winemakers.
Yes, but they don't give away wine. They don't, and they don't make it
not give cheap. Away, but no, like no, retail I, price.
But they, yeah, but they don't make it cheaper. You have to be pretty deep in the industry to get wine for cheap.
Wow.
Yeah.
Damn, what's wrong with those people?
I can make you a whole list. But I'd have to write it down, and it's going to take a while.
All right.
Well, Golly, it's been wonderful talking to you. I really appreciate your time.
For sure, it was fun.
And if you make it out to here to San Francisco or around, you know, Northern California again, then I'm going to look you up. And if you come to Napa, I will make sure you get cheap or free wine.
Yeah, we'll trade some licks for some wine. How about that?
Very good. I like that idea.
Right on, with chance, good to meet you.
Nice to meet you as well.
We'll talk soon. Thank you.
My pleasure, absolutely. The pleasure's all mine. It's been an honor. Right. Bye.
Bye-bye.
Thanks for listening to Have Guitar, Will Travel. You can catch up on all the things I'm doing at thedeadlies.com. And I'm on all the social media platforms as well. And please support Vintage Guitar and all the wonderful things they do, because they do many, many wonderful things for us guitar players. Thanks. Please subscribe. Please tell a friend. And I'll see you guys next week. Bye, guys.